Well, brethren, let me ask you a question this morning. I'll start off by asking you a simple question. It's a very simple question, but I think it's a very, very important question at the same time. And it's a question that I think that all of us need to ask. And it doesn't matter if we're, been in the faith for a year, or we've been in the faith for 30, 40, 50, 80 years. It doesn't really matter. There's a question that we all need to ask ourselves, and that is, what is our focus? What is our focus? Because your focus will tell you so much about yourself. It will tell you about your love. It will tell you about your affections. It will tell you about your desires and your motivations. But your focus will also help you get through some of the toughest times in your life. I'd like to spend some time in Philippians chapter 1 today. And I'd like to look at the words of the Apostle Paul as he gave those to us. He wrote to the Philippians, but they're for us today as well, that he wrote so long ago. There are times in our lives that there are circumstances that can be used by Satan to distract us. He can use circumstances to derail us. He can use them to disrupt us in our focus of the kingdom of God. Now, today, maybe more than ever, we need focus. We need to have focus on what's most important in our life, and we need to take stock of that and make adjustments or corrections to align ourselves with God and His Word and what He has planned for us in our lives. You know, there are many trials, and I'll call them circumstances as well, but there are many times in our life that these trials that we go through, these circumstances we're in, we can blame on ourselves. We can say, well, that's really my fault that I'm in that. For instance, you know, you could have a turpentine bottle that you set on the edge of the table, and you reached across the table to get the brush so you could paint the turpentine on something, and as you swing back around, the turpentine gets knocked off of the table, and it knocks that suit that you just had dry cleaned off, it pours all over that suit, and that suit that you had just cleaned and you didn't put away on that, let's say, that ragged, dirty hanger that you said, you know, I need to replace that hanger, and it scratches the china cabinet all the way down to the floor. That one you just bought. You say, man, I should have put that suit away. And then you see the turpentine as it begins to puddle on the floor and moves around the suit, and then it rolls into that outlet in the floor that you said, you know, I need to change that to a GFI sometime, and you never did. And then it explodes into flames. And then those flames begin to engulf the suit, and it goes up the china cabinet, and you say, oh no, I got to do something about this. Man, I've got to get that fire extinguisher. And you turn around and you trip over the rug, the one that's been sticking up for a while, and you say, man, I've been needing to fix that rug so I don't fall and kill myself, which you almost do. And you realize that the fire extinguisher you didn't put in the corner that you said you were going to do 6 months ago and you never did. You realize, oh, it's in the garage. And it's in the garage beneath all of that junk that you were supposed to take to the Goodwill store about 6 months ago and you never did. And by the time you get that out from underneath all the clothes or all that junk in the garage and you get back into the house, the entire china cabinet, your suit, and everything is up in flames all the way to the roof, and there's nothing, or the ceiling, there's nothing you can do, so you go out and call 911. Those are things that, an unbelievable source of events or events that occur that really, you know, that's just what we caused. I mean, God could have arrested any of that at that time, but all of those things you think, well, we should have done this and this and this and this and this, but we didn't. But this is not what I'm talking about today. I'm not necessarily talking about that. Well, we could apply it to that. But there are trials also that come upon our lives or circumstances that we find ourselves in from the outside that we really had no hand in creating. And that's really where we find most of ourselves in most of the time in our lives. There may be a strong windstorm that comes by, for instance, and a tree that you didn't know didn't have a very good root system. And it blows over onto your house, tears the roof off, and then it floods the house. I mean, that actually happened to our neighbor down here. Didn't flood his house, but it got it pretty wet inside. I mean, those are kind of things that happen. What if somebody, an arsonist, come and sets fire to your business? I mean, what if something like that happens? Or, you know, you have, let's say, a diagnosis of cancer that comes back. That could happen to any one of us. Or, you know, and I can go on and on and on. What are the circumstances that can happen in our lives? And as bad as all these things sound, they're really worse when you're in it. When you're actually living it, it makes it even a little bit worse. But how is it possible to keep focus when it seems that the world is spinning out of control around you? How is it possible to do that when your circumstances are such that you have every reason, you think, to be grumpy or to be edgy or to be short-sighted at what's going on? You could be short-tempered. You could be disappointed, discouraged, depressed. You have every reason to feel that way. How is it possible to keep focus? You know, it would seem reasonable to feel upset. It would seem normal to have this woe is me attitude in the circumstance. And I, you know, mean when these circumstances happen to you, you almost can't help but how you feel. That's just how you feel in it. And you just feel that way, and you kind of wait until the circumstances get better until your feelings change. And that seems reasonable, and that seems normal, and that seems right. But the Proverbs say that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Now, thoughts are things that we can control. We can control many of the things that come into our head. We're told to bring every thought into captivity, for instance. We're told not to let emotions that are destructive, like anger anger like fire. It's like a tempest that gets out of control and consumes everything. Don't let those things happen. We're to express power over our emotions and not let those emotions take us down a path that becomes very dangerous. You know, if we can't help but how we feel, then what are we to say to the homosexual who says, well, I can't help but how I feel. This is how I feel. What do we say to the alcoholic who says, well, this is just what I feel. I just want to drink that drink. What are we supposed to say to them? What about the man or even the woman that's addicted to pornography? This is just, you know, the way I feel. What do we say to those people? You know, if we left men to their baser instincts, this world would be really bad. It's bad enough. It'd be even worse than it is now. What do we say to the rapist, the murderer, the thief? These are just feelings that overcome them, and they do whatever they do that is against God's law. So they all have overwhelming emotions as well. Everyone does. But what we, you know, well, let me ask you this. What if you had been whipped with a lash 190 times or more? Somebody took you and they whipped you like they did in the slave days. What kind of person do you think you would be? What if you had these red, crusty, pussy eyes and you couldn't read very well? You know, before antibiotics came along, many people had conditions where they had conjunctivitis or other problems. They didn't really know what to do about it. What if you were on a boat at sea and it crashed like the Titanic did? And it capsized and you were thrown overboard and you had to get in a boat and you had to wait for the ship to come to save you. What if this happened over and over again? What if you were in a capsize after capsize after capsize? What if you floated on the ocean for a day with no water around? You know, people have floated on the ocean for days on end waiting for somebody to come save them. What if you had to sleep outside in the cold? What if you were hungry? You went hungry over and over and over again. You went hungry. What if you had your clothes torn from your back? What if people robbed you? What if they beat you and they left you for dead? How would your emotions be? What if you were falsely imprisoned again and again and again? What kind of person would you be? What kind of person would you be? What if all of these things happened to you in your lifetime? What kind of person would you be? Would you be angry at the world? Would you be angry at God? Would you be vindictive? Would you be harsh, short-tempered? Would you be unforgiving? This was the life of the Apostle Paul. All of those things that happened, all of those things that I explained, happened in the life of the Apostle Paul. Something's happening back here. I locked the door. That's a Seventh-day Church. Jehovah's Witness. Yeah. But all of these in his lifetime. But his emotive responses to his circumstances weren't how Paul responded. I'd like you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 24. Paul will list here many of the afflictions that he went through in this section. He'll list many of the things that he endured throughout his life. And I want to just read this to you. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 24, it says, of the Jews, five times I received 40 stripes save one. Three times was I beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils by heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils at sea, in perils among false brethren. It didn't matter where he went. He was in trouble. In weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. I want you to notice that Paul didn't blame Satan for all of the bad things that happened to him. He did say that there was a messenger of Satan that was responsible for his eyes. Now, yes, Satan bears culpability for all of the sins and many circumstances that we're in, but that really isn't relevant to the focus that we should have in our lives. Well, it's Satan's fault. If it wasn't for him, dot, dot, dot. You know, Flip Wilson is a comedian in the early 70s. You may remember Flip Wilson. He had a variety show on television. And I remember watching as a kid. And he portrayed stereotypical characters like Freddy the Playboy, among others, who could be very offensive, if you remember. But his most popular character was Geraldine. Geraldine, and I'll say she because he wore a woman's clothes, and that was Geraldine, the character he played. She wore these designer clothes along with these yellow-green stockings, and her hair was always perfect, and she demanded respect from her listeners. And the one-liners that Flip put in her mouth became national household sayings, like, when you're hot, you're hot. But the favorite Wilson quip was one used when Geraldine was rationalizing bad things she had done, and she would suddenly look demure and say, the devil made me do it. And she would say that, can I kill that thing? Oh. There's no PETA lovers here, right? So anyway, she would say, the devil made me do it. And that became very popular in society. The devil made me do it. Paul didn't go into some deep discourse about how life would be great if it weren't for these things. He didn't discuss all the fun he was missing out on because of his circumstances. Well, man, I could do this and I could have this fun if all these things didn't happen to me. He didn't say that. Paul was focused. He was focused through everything that he went through. Of course, it's not to say that, he was all the time. We're all human. You know, we'll have sad times. We might cry or we might stress over something. And sometimes we can be overwhelmed. We're still human. We're still fleshly. We still fight those fleshly things. But those things shouldn't consume our lives. You see, Paul had been put through the ringer. He'd been put through the ringer over and over and over again. And here was a man who was called of God. He was taught by Christ himself personally. And then, sometime later, he was hammered. He was really hammered with so many problems, so many trials throughout his life. He was hammered. And so what's he going to tell the Philippians from prison? What is it that he's going to tell this church that he loved as he was waiting in prison for his death? This was, I think, was written in 62 AD in Rome. He wrote this epistle from prison where he's awaiting the decision from the authorities. Is he going to live or is he going to die? What's he going to tell them? Look in Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1. And let's read the first two verses. And here in Philippians chapter 1, this was the church that he loved so much, to the church at Philippi. Paul and Timothy, the servants of Jesus Christ, to all the saints in Christ Jesus, which are at Philippi with the bishops and deacons, grace be unto you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. Now here's a greeting of grace and peace unto you. Now that's a pretty happy and that's a pretty upbeat way to start a letter from prison. In other words, he doesn't start this letter, for instance, saying, My brethren, the circumstances here are dire. My bonds rub my ankles, cutting my flesh as my spirit is diminishing. You don't see anything like that as he writes here. No, you see, Paul was exhibiting focus. And so the question we have to ask ourselves, brethren, is where is our focus? Where is your focus? Where is my focus? Is it upward? Is it outward? Or is it inward? And I'm going to suggest to you that if the focus is inward, we're going to lose the battle every time. Every single time we will lose that battle. Focus is the key. There is tremendous power in focus. When you take the circumstances of life and then you choose to look at them from a particular vantage point, that dictates how you are going to feel. So circumstances, and then you add the perspective. Where are you looking at things that happen in life? Are you looking at it from above? Are you looking at it from below? Produces how you handle the circumstances that you experience in it. How do you do that? Now, I really want you to think about that for a minute. Think about how we look at circumstances in our lives, because in most cases, we don't have control of our circumstances. We don't have control. We have no control over them. Things in life just happen to us. And as much as we prepare, you know, we can have that flat tire when we're on the way to that big interview for that great job. And there's nothing that we can do about it. We just have to change the tire and go on. As much as we prepare, when that sparrow or that bird flies overhead and it decides to relieve itself, right when you say, I do, there is nothing that we can do about it. You see, in most cases, you have absolutely no control over your circumstances. But what we do have control over is the way that we look at them, the way that we handle them, the way that we choose to respond to them, and what is our attitude going to be in them. And when the question comes to you, well, how are you doing today? And you say, well, pretty well under the circumstances. Really, you need to say, well, why are you under the circumstances? You need to be over the circumstances. Don't be under them. Get over them. Looking at circumstances that I can't control through the lens of God will put us in a whole different attitude than looking at the same thing through our own lens. So what lens are we looking at the things that life in? Because when we see it with our own eyes, we seem helpless, we seem lost, which leads to despair, which leads to depression, which leads to hopelessness. And without hope, there's no hope. Without hope, it's a lost cause. We've got to have hope. But having God's eternal perspective will give us the ability to have joy no matter what comes at us in our lives. So the question is, how can you and I develop the kind of perspective on life that regardless of the circumstances that we find ourselves in on a daily basis, we can still experience the joy that God has for us? How do we do that? How do we experience that joy? God wants us to have this joy. And the answer is focus. The answer is focus. What do you focus on when circumstances in your life are seemingly out of control and they're difficult? Even when life is hard, even when things happen that hurt, even when relationships are troubled and relationships are breaking apart, and everybody's going to have relationship problems at some point. Even when work just isn't going right, when a child, a marriage, a parent is ailing, or something is very painful and very difficult, where is your focus? Because whatever it may be, God says that there can be joy and a peace in your life if you only allow it in that circumstance. How did Paul do it? How did Paul do it? Well, God's going to show us how Paul did it. But not just so we can leave here today say, oh, wow, that's how Paul did it, and then forget it. I don't want that to happen. And oftentimes we just leave and we can't really remember what is it that we learned? What do we need to take from this? Don't leave here and say, well, Paul, that's great. Paul did it. Now, what do I do? I want to teach you. What did Paul do and what are we going to do? How do we make this happen? God wants us to be able to move from an academic exercise into a practical exercise. This is how Paul did it, and this is how we're going to do it as well. This is how you're going to experience joy. This is how Paul's going to teach you, and this is how you're going to find joy and live above the circumstances in the midst of adversity. You know, when you're struggling financially, when one of your parents is dying, when your child's not doing well, when your mom or your dad are getting sicker or older, your spouse becomes suddenly sick or dies, how do you deal with it? What's the circumstance going on in your life, brethren? Everybody has something. Everybody has something. What's going on in your life right now that where you feel, well, if God will just get rid of that, then I'll be better. Then I'll be happy. I'll be content. God shows us in verse 3, Philippians chapter 1, in verse 3, what is the first thing that we have to do? And that first thing is to get an upward focus. Get an upward focus. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 3, he says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making requests with joy for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident in this very thing, that he which has begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. So Paul says, I'm thanking God. For what? What's he thanking God for? For every memory of you. I'm thanking God for every memory of you. Now that is upwardly focused to God and outwardly focused to the Philippians. This is actually a very tender, a very intimate, and it's a very loving sentence here, a phrase. I thank God for every memory of you. Every time I pray, he says, it's with pure joy. Every time I pray, I joy for the time that we spent together. From the time, he says, basically, you know, when I met Lydia down by the riverside, and we went back to the house and we sat and we discussed about the truth and the word and Jesus Christ. And we shared together and we baptized converts and we learned. I thank God for every memory that I have of all of those things that we did, not just in times past, but also in we learn later that they sent Epaphroditus to him to give gifts. I thank God and you for all of that, for what you do for me now. So you see, Paul's focus was upward. Paul's focus was outward. I don't read anything about chains. I don't read anything about how bad it is in prison. I don't read anything about how horrible the food is that the Roman jailers are giving to him. I don't read anything about people not caring for Paul. His focus is upward and outward. I have people that come in to my office, and all they do, every sentence that comes out of their mouth is this and that about how somebody did this wrong to him, how somebody did this wrong to him, and how miserable life is for this and that. And it makes you depressed. It makes you feel sad for them too. What kind of life are they living? I'd like you to look at three key words here. Three key words. And the first one is thank. First key word is thank. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. And this begins with a choice. You know, it always begins with a choice, doesn't it? Everything begins with a choice. Adam and Eve were presented with a choice. The devil made me pick that tree. No, it was a choice. And every time a circumstance comes upon us, we're presented with a choice. And what do we choose? Do we choose to complain and groan and moan and wail? Why me? Why me? We've all done it. Why me? And really the question is, we've heard it before, why not me? If I'm a child of God, and I'm a son of the very living God, why not me? Why do I think that I'm better than Paul? Why do I think that I am better than the disciples? Why do I think I'm better than Christ? Do I think that I'm better than Christ's inner circle? Peter, who was crucified. James, who was thrust through with a sword. John, who was exiled to Patmos. Why do I think I'm better? No, we need to make a choice in our circumstance. And the right choice is that we need to be grateful. We should always give thanks. We should always give thanks, and we should fully rejoice in thanksgiving to God. And most times, frankly, we're simply going to have to say, I don't understand this. I don't understand why I'm in the circumstance. I don't know why, but I thank you for it and what you are doing in it, and that you are in control of it. Paul doesn't say, thank you very much, God, now get it gone. Just think it disappeared. And the thanks aren't, you know, in a void or a vacuum. Paul ties his thankfulness to God for others that are in his life that are significant to him. Why? Because they're significant to God. And Paul is thankful for the relational memories of the Philippians. Now listen, if your spouse gets Alzheimer's, you thank God for the memories that he allowed you to have with your spouse. And you thank him for the time in the future when you're going to spend time serving your spouse, taking care of them, giving to them, loving them, and serving them. And if they have a stroke and they come to the point where they can't walk or they can't speak, you thank God for the times that you had with them. And you thank God for the ability to serve them and to spend time with them. You thank God for all of those things, for the memories that we have in the good times and sharing in the sufferings of the bad. And if your parents die, young or old, slow or fast, you thank God for the memories and the time you had with your parents and that you developed with them over the years. And when your five-year-old child or your grandchild breaks your special china, you thank God for the times that you have with your child. And if need be, you discipline them. Right? But for training, not for vengeance. Thank God for the good stuff. Thank him that in the bad that we're learning something. You see, even in the storms of life, we have a choice to thank God in that time. Even something as gut-wrenching as the death of a child. To me, which seems like one of the worst things I can ever imagine. You thank God even in the death of that child. How do we respond? You know, we may still have other children that we have to take care of. You can't go down a depressed road. You have a spouse that you've got to take care of. Those things, they're there. We are blessed by them. We can bless others. And there are others that are impacted when they see the things that you go through and your example in them. We can be thankful for the very life that we have and for the image that we're being shaped into of what God is making us. Of us. There is always something to be thankful for. There's always something that we can find to be thankful for, and that begins with a choice of living above our circumstances and focusing on the significant relationships that matter in our lives. And that was what Paul did, on the significant relationships that he had with the Philippians. Because if we choose to focus inwardly, everything will spiral. And you'll get lost in that, and we'll think about what we have instead of what we don't, what we don't have instead of what we have. Everybody does that. We always think about what we don't have rather than what we have because we already have it. You know, we'll focus on ourselves and we'll not focus on others. Paul was focused on the Philippians. So first, when you're in a circumstance, the first thing to choose is to focus upward. To focus upward in thankfulness and gratefulness and thanksgiving. Secondly, the word I want you to look at is prayer. Prayer. Always in every prayer of mine, he says. Always in every prayer of mine. To have an upward focus, we have to pray. And by the way, at some point in the prayer, it should move from a point of, let's say, a prayer of sadness or even complaint to a prayer of thanksgiving and joy. It should sometime move into that. When you think of King David and all of the Psalms that he wrote, David had many lamenting prayers. There are many throughout there. But do you notice they all turned to praise? They all shifted to praise somewhere in that. Praise for what God has done and what he will do. There's a past tense that he uses in those prayers, and then a future tense, what God has done and what he will do for him. You know, it's difficult to think of others when we're struggling with something. It's difficult to have a joyful heart when we go to God in a trial. And it's hard to focus on the blessings that we do have when all we can think about is what we don't have in the current circumstance. I mean, we've all been there. I've been there. You've been there. We've all thought about that. But when your whole prayer is about your own difficulties, your narcissism can spiral into a deep inward focus. And I'm not talking about an inward reflection where you step back and look at yourself. That's not the same kind of thing. I'm talking about a fog that can just simply come over you and just engulf your entire spirit so that your outward focus on others just simply disappears. And a deep depression begins to set in. You know that God does not always offer a way out of circumstances. He never promised that. But he said, I will provide a way through them. I will provide a way through them. He always offers a way through them, and it comes from a focus that is outward and upward. God is saying and telling you and I, this is where I want you to go. I want you to go up, and I want you to go out. I want you to come to me and make a choice to have an attitude of gratitude and thankfulness and prayer so that I can draw you close to me, so that I can keep you close. And notice what type of attitude Paul has. The third point is this. The third word is this. It's confident. It's confident. Being confident, he says, of this very thing in verse 6, that he which has begun a good work in you, so not around you, not in your circumstances, but in you, will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. So Paul said that he is confident that God will complete it. He's confident that God will finish it. He will put the icing on the cake. He'll put the cream on the latte. He'll put the cherry on the top. And the reason that Paul can make the statement is because he had devoted focus. He knew that God was in control, not only of his life, but he knew that God was with him in the shipwrecks, and in the stonings, and the beatings, and the robbings, and the starvations, and the whippings, and he knew he was with him even now in jail as his life hung in the balance. He knew that, and he knew also that God was with his crown jewel, the Philippians. He knew he was with them, and that he would not forsake them either, and he expresses this to them. God didn't forsake Paul and all the bad things that happened to them. Paul understood that. And he knew he was being molded and he was being shaped and he was being trimmed and the rough edges were being ground down and sanded and he was being transformed into something. Well, he was being transformed into the image of Jesus Christ. He knew that's what was happening. Listen, life may at times seem out of control. But that's just the way you and I look at it. That's just the way we see it. It's not really that way. It may seem out of our control, and it is. It's out of our control. But you see, when circumstances are so bad that you feel like life is spinning out of control, do you really think you had control over it before? Do you really think that when times are good, you had control over all of that, and when times are bad, you don't have control? You know, do we think that we're controlling all the circumstances? Now, I want you to really think about that. Do you have control over your circumstances? They just happen to you. They just happen to us. The only thing that we have control over is how do we respond? How do we respond to them? And if we respond with an upward and an outward focus, it really won't seem so out of control any longer. And we just say, God, I'm really just on the ride that you put me on, and I'm going to enjoy everything I can about it because you know how fast I should go. You know how slow to take me. You know how I can go around the curves and upside down. And you know what time I'm supposed to get there. I'm sure everybody has ridden a roller coaster here at some point. Maybe? No? Most have ridden a roller coaster. Well, if you have, you'll know that once you let go of the fear and the trepidation you have when you're sitting in that seat and you trust the builder of that coaster and you believe that it will do what he intended it to do, that really the ride isn't so bad. And I used to be real scared of roller coasters. Well, you just let that fear go. and you trust in that coaster. You can be thankful for the ride on that roller coaster. If it's a hot day, thank God for the wind that blows through your hair and cools you off. Thank God for the times of screaming of joy that you will have and you can discuss with your friends in that moment. The memories that you're going to make. Those are good times. That's a great experience on a ride on a roller coaster. But if you work yourself up with trepidation and you think about the what ifs and the I can'ts and the I'm not sure and the focus then becomes completely inwardly and fear comes over you, well then it's a different ride. It's the worst thing that could ever happen to you. Have confidence. Have confidence that God built the ride for you. And have confidence that the ride will work the way it's supposed to work. And have confidence that God is setting the compass of your inner spiritual life and making you more and more like His Son every single day, every single moment of your life, even when life seems to just go crazy around you. Have confidence that God is there. Do we trust Him? Do we let Him have all of us? You know, God allowed everything to be taken away from Job, and then He restored it twice over. He restored it twice over. He can restore broken relationships. He can turn your kids around. He can bring healing. He can restore anything that He desires. And those restorations are always something to have hope for as we look to God. But the primary focus that we have to have is to look upward and to look outward. Because like Paul, sometimes you don't get out of prison unless it's to die. And that's okay. That's okay. But it really matters not, because the joy that is set before us is the attainment of the goal of the kingdom of God. That's the joy that is set before us, becoming like the image of His dear Son. Even in all the seeming turmoil, there is our focus. That's our focus. Kevin Costner starred in this movie called For the Love of the Game, or For Love of the Game. And he plays this veteran Major League Baseball pitcher who's at the end of his career, and he's trying to prove to everyone that he still has what it takes to be in the big league, to be successful. One of my favorite parts of the movie is when, you know, he's on the mound and he's not throwing strikes, he's not getting people out, and you see that he's clearly focusing on the shrill sounds of the crowd, the noise, the horns that are blowing, the taunts, the screamings. He's focused on the other coaches that are yelling at him, the other team. He's focused on the batter, you know, the hitter that's opposing him. And when he does that, he loses his focus and his performance wanes and it suffers. And then he learns this technique that he uses, and he simply says to himself, as he listens to all this, he learns this technique. He says, clear the mechanism. And when that happens, all of a sudden the crowd noise dies down. And he can't hear any of it anymore. Doesn't hear the sounds of the crowd or the taunting of the other team or the horns they're blowing. Doesn't even look at the batter. All he does is now he can see the catcher and the mitt more clearly than he ever could before. And then you know what he does? He begins to throw strikes. He throws strike after strike after strike, and he strikes the batters out. Brethren, if we want to throw strikes all day long and all life long, we have to clear the mechanism. Clear the mechanism and focus on the things that really matter. Focus that goes upward to God and outward to others. Thank God for what He's doing with you. Thank God for Him for caring so much about you that He chose to treat you like He treated His own Son. His Son went through trials and tribulation, and so will we. You know, in foster parent homes, the way that these foster kids really feel a part of the family, really the way they feel like they're really blood children, is when they're treated exactly the same way the children are. Love is shown in discipline. Thank God for the relationships, the memories you have, and the growth of others in the gospel. Pray for others for strength and comfort and peace peace, and develop an attitude of confidence, real belief, real faith that God will not leave you. You see, we can't let emotions control us. Emotions are a part of being human. They're needful and they're actually necessary. And if we're emotionless, actually some studies show you can't make decisions. You've got to have emotions. But we can't let it put us on the wrong path and let it overtake us. Moving further down in Philippians now, Paul says that an upward focus isn't enough, and we've already talked about this a bit, but he's also showing us that an outward focus is necessary. Philippians chapter 1, verse 7, it says, "Even as it is right for me to feel this of all of you, because I have you in my heart in so much as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you are all partakers of my grace." He's saying that we've experienced the grace of God even through the midst of all adversity, and you're in my heart. And listen to the next line. It's one of the most interesting verses, I think, in this whole section here. "For God is my record, how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ." Now that, written in the King James, probably doesn't say it the way that I think it really should say it. But this is a very tender, very loving statement. This is he's saying to a group of people. Now imagine saying that to a group of people. "How I greatly long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ." He's not writing this to his mom. He's not writing this to his parents or his children or his wife. He's writing this to the Philippians. He's saying this to a group that is, "God is my witness, I long for you. I long for you." It's very tender. It's very loving. And Paul's life is so filled up with care and concern of other people that he didn't have time to be concerned about himself as he sat there in prison. He longed for the Philippians. I want you to look at five words, and you don't have to circle them, but really just kind of think about these five words that will kind of bring back again to life the message of this portion here. I feel, even as it is right for me to feel this of you. Second is heart, because I had you in my heart. Third is partakers, which is an interesting word, which means connected together or interwoven. Fourth is long, I long for you. And fifth is affection. Where is his focus? Difficult circumstances reveal our true affections. And when God allows the vice of difficulty and pressures to come upon us in our life, what comes out is what our true affections really are. You know, in order to make great tasting wine, you've got to crush the grapes so that the juice spills out. And when the Apostle Paul is in prison and he's under chains and he's being beaten up and he's awaiting execution, what pops out of Paul's heart? What is it that spills out of him? There's a longing and a feeling and love and partaking and affection. And he's just focused on other people. He's focused on them. So where, we have to ask ourselves, where's our focus? Where's my focus? And where are our affections? Sometimes God allows adverse circumstances. He allows tough times, whatever it may be, to make great people. And you put somebody through some training and you say, "Wow, look what came out of that. You never would have seen that if you hadn't have squeezed them just a little bit to see, wow, look at that. That is potential." And great people are those who know what really matters. And they commit their lives and their time and their energies to what really matters. And brethren, you are all great people. What spills out of you should be our affections and our love towards others. And when the world is seemingly out of control, we have to stop. We have to get an upward focus. We have to make the choice of prayer. Have gratitude, an attitude of confidence in God, that His sovereignty is there. And then we get that outward focus and we begin to live life for others. And we discover what we can do to serve others. And frankly, it can begin right here. It can begin right now. It can begin today. What are we going to do to serve others? How can we love someone by serving them? How can we take the load off of someone and bear someone's burden? How can we lighten it, even if it's just a little tiny thing? How are we going to do that? How can we take that load off? What can we do here to serve? And we can just think about here in the local congregation. I mean, most people don't have assignments for things. I mean, everybody is usually brings some sort of a snack, which we really enjoy, and it helps us stick around. We can enjoy it together. Everybody likes to fellowship and eat at the same time. That's an act of service. That's an act of love. What about moving chairs back? What about taking things down? What about, you know, there are typically people that do the same sort of thing over and over, but no one's assigned to things. What can we do to help serve the congregation here locally? How can we do that? You can think of many things, and it may just be a comment. And others are really good at that. Some are very good at comforting, and others are not. I'm not a good comforter. I'll admit that. But some people are great comforters, and that is how they serve, and that is how they love one another. In the movie Groundhog Day, Bill Murray gets stuck in the sleepy town of Punxsutawney, PA, on Groundhog Day. If you've ever seen the movie, it's probably one of my favorite movies, believe it or not. But in the movie, he wakes up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and he wakes up to the song by Sonny and Cher, "I Got You, Babe." And he gets ready, and he goes out, and he does his report on the groundhog, you know, coming out. And then he goes to bed, and the next morning he wakes up at 7 o'clock, and he wakes up to Sonny and Cher singing, "I Got You, Babe." And he finds out he's stuck on the same day over and over again, continuously in this loop. And it doesn't matter what he can do, he can never get out of that day. And at the beginning of the movie, he starts out thinking, well, this is horrible. Then he continues on and he thinks, well, this is great. But he's very self-centered. He thinks about what he can get for himself. Actually, he starts out going after a girl, trying to seduce her. How can he sleep with this woman? That never worked out, but he starts thinking about how he can get money. So he starts robbing and he starts stealing. And he starts eating as many donuts as he can possibly pile in his mouth in an hour. And he does all the things that he knows he shouldn't do. But he thinks, well, it doesn't matter anyway, because the next day it's going to be the same day all over again. It's going to restart the whole cycle. But as the movie goes along, he begins to understand that doesn't really give him any meaning in the life. And he starts helping people, but he starts helping people for his own ends, to get rewards, to get compliments. But even that didn't work. And by the end of the movie, you see him starting to just selflessly serve everybody he comes in contact with. And he serves so much that he can't even accomplish everything he wants to do for the entire day. And then towards the end of the movie, you find him laying in a bed, non-sexually, by the way, with the woman that he grew to love over those many years being stuck in the same day. And they go to sleep, and the next morning, the clock turns to 7, and you hear the song, "I Got You, Babe," but it's different. Now the announcers are talking differently. It's now the next day. One of the neatest things is he turns over to his newfound love, and one of the first things that comes out of his mouth is he says, "What can I do for you today?" He developed this attitude of service. An upward and an outward focus will totally and completely transform your life. Not your circumstances, but you. It will transform you. And really, that's all we have control over is ourselves. So the principle I suggest out of this passage is that our focus always follows our affections. Our focus always follows our affections, and our focus is the key word, always following our affections, focus. Now, I hope at this point you're thinking, yes, yes, this is the life that I want to have. This is the life that I want to cultivate even more than I have now. And I want to have an upward focus even more and an outward focus even more, but I'm, you know, still not really sure how to do that exactly. Well, in verses 9 through 11, the Apostle Paul is going to tell us how he prayed specifically for these people. And he's going to tell us what we need to pray, how he prayed the Philippians and what we should pray for. You're going to see that in his circumstances, he's maintaining an upward and outward focus. And in verse 9, you're going to hear his request. In verse 10, you're going to hear the reason for his request. In verse 11, you will see the resource for the basis of his request. So let's look at verse 9 at his request. He says simply, "This I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment." So that's what he was praying. He was praying to God for them. This is his request for them and for us today too. This is for us, that our love may abound in knowledge and judgment or discernment. So he loves these people, and he loves them so much that his love for them spills out of him like juice from the grape. And he prays for their affections, the things that matter most to them, their desires, their motivations are expressed. Where is he asking God to direct it? There are two things that are mentioned. He prays that their love may abound more and more in two things. First, in knowledge. Now, this is an interesting Greek word for knowledge. It's not an intellectual knowledge of God. That's a different Greek word. This is a Greek word that means knowing God personally and deeply through experience. Getting to know him by the tools that we have at our disposal, mainly prayer and studying, but we can, you can throw in fellowship, fasting, and meditation, and all those as well. But it's an experience of knowing God. It's knowledge that comes with time with God and interaction with God and a true knowledge of him, of knowing God deeply and knowing God personally. So he says, I pray that your love and your affections would be not toward your circumstances working out, but that you would know God in an intimate and personal way more than anything else. I want you to know your Father. And the second thing is, he says, I pray that all discernment, and that word means the ability to know what is true and to know what is right. It means the ability to choose between right and wrong, to know what's better and best. And so Paul's request is that our affections will be shifted to know God in a deeply personal way, shifted from what they are now to knowing God personally and having the kind of discernment to know what is good and what is best, what's right and what's wrong. And now here's the key phrase, and it's a small one, and that is so that, on the second part of this verse, chapter 1 and verse 10, so that, he's going to give the reason why he prayed and why we should pray for these things, so that you may approve things that are excellent. So why does the Apostle Paul want you to know and long to know God so deeply? So that you may approve the things that are excellent. Those things that are excellent. He wants us to know God in such an intimate way so that we can discern right and wrong, that we can approve the things that are excellent. And the word approve here is a word for testing metal. You know, if you have a piece of gold or a piece of silver, there's different tests you can do to find out if it's real. Years ago, they used to bite it because gold was softer than most base metals if they mixed it, and it would kind of sink in a little bit. It's a testing. And the word approve is to test. It's to examine. And he's saying that once you understand who God is and you understand the difference between right and wrong, then circumstances or people or opportunities or businesses or relationships, you'll be able to see in those what is the best course of action. How do you respond to all of those different things? How do you respond in an excellent way? Should we see this movie? Should we not? Or should we send our kids to this school? Should we live in this particular city? Should we live in that neighborhood? You know, where should we retire? We have a better sense of knowing, because this ability of deeply knowing God and knowing what's right and what's wrong is that it will give us the ability to test everything that comes at us in our life, every circumstance we find ourselves in. And the next verse gives us the ultimate purpose. Is it in order that you will be sharp and quick and smart, and everything you do will turn out in your favor? Is that what he says? No, that's not what the next verse says. I'm sorry, the second part of the verse, Philippians chapter 1, verse 10, second part says, in order that you may be sincere and without offense till the return of Christ. In other words, let your character be blameless. Let it be holy until Christ returns. Do you know what the word sincere means? Actually, this Greek word means tested by sunlight. It's an interesting word, tested by sunlight. Now, you think of a glass door. You may have a glass. Well, you can think of this glass door. The glass door at home, and you know how you clean your glass doors? You clean them really well. Maybe in the evening or night, you clean them really well, and you think, step back, that looks great. Looks really good. Fantastic. Go to bed, get up in the morning. Sun shines through the door, and you see all these streaks. Man, that looks awful. I can't hardly believe I cleaned that thing. That's what that is. It's tested by sunlight. Paul says that he wants you to know and long for God so deeply that we know the difference between right and wrong. We have the ability to judge our affections to say, this is where I need to put my time, my energies, my resources, and my devotions in every situation so that we'll know what's excellent. And then you do what is excellent and it produces two things. It produces purity, as it says here, the sincerity, moral purity, and it produces holiness. It means that you live an authentic Christian life. And that is Paul's prayer for us, and that is God's plan for us. That is his purpose in his working in our lives. Sometimes fires will come in our lives and we'll have broken relationships and we'll have death and we'll have pain and we'll have hurt and financial setbacks and depression, and on it will go. And other people will have that. But we should pray for these people in these situations because we want them to have love that will abound so deeply and to have a longing to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and with God the Father. In wanting to know God more than the circumstance being changed right at the moment. That's really the more important thing. Because right now isn't forever. It's very fleeting. I remember talking to a college girl just last week, and she had been thinking about dentistry, and she decided against it because the schooling was just too long. And hey, I've been there. I've thought that before. It's just too much. And I said to her, you can't think that way. Because once you get up to my age, that short amount of schooling, well, even if it's 8 years, that is nothing. That is nothing in the scope of your lifetime. So Paul gives us the basis in verse 11. In verse 11, as we wrap it up here, verse 11, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ unto the glory of, and praise of God. And these fruits come into the vessel. That's you. You're the vessel. By Jesus Christ living in you. And Christ moving in you through the Holy Spirit. So Paul is saying, look, he said, I'm praying that you'll have this desire, this deep desire to know God, that you'll be able to tell the difference between right and wrong in order to make wise decisions, approve things that are excellent so that your life will reflect Jesus Christ, because he says, you are being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are, it says, by Jesus Christ abiding in you. How is that expressed? Through helping others. How is that expressed through your service? Or I should say it is. It's expressed through your service. Don't suppress him. He that lives within you. Follow him. Because our actions always follow our thinking. And what you think will satisfy you, what you long for, the actions of fulfilling that will always follow your thinking. It will always follow your thinking. And your thinking will follow your focus. What is your focus? So, brethren, when bad times come, or even good, what is our focus? Let's take the advice of the Apostle Paul and Kevin Costner. Clear the mechanism. Clear all the distractions. And focus. Focus upward. And focus outward.